The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. We are live on this Thursday night. Of course, if you miss any of the show, you can catch the rest of it on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. or WGCLradio.com. We're going to be talking estate planning. You know, statistically, people spend more time planning that spring break vacation that I just went on than they do planning their estate. Our good old friend Tom Bunger from Bunger & Robertson will be with us in just a few minutes as we walk you through the different aspects of estate planning, some of the things you may not even know exist, some opportunities for you to pass on things without getting going through all the hassles of legal work. So look forward to that, and we'll get to Tom in just a few minutes. Little news of the week brought to you by, let's see, who is it brought to you by? Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage over on 17th Street. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. Newly remodeled, 24-hour monitored access, offering pickup. Go online to BloomingtonAffordableStorage.com. All right. You know, interest rates are going up, right? Well, maybe not. You know, the Fed starts to, when they started to raise interest rates back in 2015, we only saw the 10-year Treasury increase by like 0.23. Since the last increase, just recently in March, we've seen the Treasury rates come down. So the Fed affects the short end, guys, but doesn't really affect the long end that much. So if you're a mortgage person, you need to, you know, whatever, borrow money, don't worry. The rates aren't moving too quickly. You see this? The Treasury Department auctioned off $193 billion, that's with a B, debt securities this past week in the final week, final quarter in 2017. So far this year, we've borrowed $1.54 trillion. That's a lot. Also, I love looking back in time and seeing what people said. Back in 2005, Fed Chairperson Ben Bernanke was asked about the housing market, and they asked if the U.S. Real estate market was in a bubble, and if it would burst, would it cause a recession? And his reply was, well, I guess, but I really don't buy your premise. I think that it's more likely that housing prices will simply slow, not go down. Of course, after that, 2007 through 2011, the average price of a single-family house plummeted well over 20%. And finally, you know, we've talked about these IRS scams before. Well, one of my good buddies sent me a recording of a voicemail he received from, quote, the IRS. You've got to hear this one.
The reason you are receiving this pre-recorded message is to notify you that IRS has issued an arrest warrant against you. Right now you and your physical property both are being monitored, and it's very important that I do hear back from you as soon as possible before we proceed further in any legal manner. My direct call back number is 253-258-0236. Again, the number is 253-258-0236. Thank you.
Unbelievable. Folks, if you receive a message like that, it is completely fraudulent. Do not call them back. If you do call them back, here's what you say. You know what? Come pick me up. I'm kind of tired of all this stuff anyway. Three hots and a cot? I'll take it. Do not offer up any money. Tom Bunger is our guest. When we come back, this is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we played that IRS scam thing, right, on air. And if you miss it, you got to check it out on Saturday morning. And Tom Bunger's with me. And, Tommy, you had the same scam calling your phone.
I had the exact same recording on my phone, including the same telephone number to call.
So if you want three hots and a cot, Tommy, you just give them a call.
Just give them a call.
Give them a call.
I actually have called them back. They really don't want to talk a whole lot.
So we talk a lot about retirement planning on the show, right? So if you're worried about how to pay for retirement, just call them, right, and go to the clink, and there you go. You're in good shape. Of course, Tom's on not to talk about that, but we're going to talk about estate planning. We're going to talk about the objectives of estate planning, planning for incapacitation, taxes, wills, probate. We're going to talk about how you can give money away if you choose to, and some of the myths about that, how to hold ownership of your different accounts. And Tom, when we talk about estate planning, obviously it's the process that gives you control over your personal matters and the assets during your lifetime, and also where they go once you die. But really, that's the basics of estate planning.
That's exactly what it's all about. And to make the plan, you and I have had this conversation with the folks before, and if people do nothing more from the time we share with them tonight but just write down, organize, put a planner together, So that you know what you've got, where it's going. You and I have both dealt with situations with people when they've lost a loved one, and they have no clue what they're dealing with, who to contact. They found something that said, oh, well, there must be something at Comprehensive, so let's call them. And then you start the chase.
Yeah, it's a bad deal. So when you think about estate planning, a lot of folks think when I'm dead. But in fact, when you're alive, there's a lot of things that you need to do.
Yes.
Or the documents that are in place can help you with.
Yes.
Let's start with a couple of those. For instance, the durable power of attorney.
Yes. Power of attorney is what it sounds. It's giving somebody power. And where it's become an estate planning, and more than anything, it's a life planning document. And it's set up to give somebody the ability to act in your stead, mm-hmm. act in your name. And now with what we have is called as a durable power of attorney, even if you're incapacitated, that person can act based upon the authority that you've given them.
I remember years ago when this was a call-in show, we were talking about this. I think Tom may even been on the show. And this lady, Evelyn was her name, she called in. You might remember this, Tom. And she called in and said, my husband died. I have his power of attorney. Is it still valid? And I'm like, well, sorry. You know, it's not, because once a person passes away, the power of attorney dies with them. And she said, but it's a durable power of attorney. I said, I don't care how durable it is. It ain't that durable.
That is the one disability we can't overcome.
You talked about a power of attorney. A lot of folks will use the word springing power of attorney, which means that if I'm incapacitated and it's proven by a million people, then I spring into action. What's your views on that?
My personal opinion is I'm not a fan of the springing power of attorney. I recognize that people are concerned that if I give you my name and the ability to write and act in my part, that they can do things with that. So I don't want them to have that right until I can't do things. And that's the concept of the springing power of attorney, because we would typically put a definition in some physician's statement that says I'm incapacitated mm-hmm. and can't do things. So therefore, the power springs into working.
Yeah.
The problem with that is I'm always trying to go around and have to prove that the person's incapacitated. If you've got the people you trust, and you do, you're right, you only give a POA to somebody you've got confidence in and knows won't mm-hmm. misuse it, then if they've got the document without that limitation, when they need to do something, they don't have to walk around with a doctor's statement. They're not going to get somebody saying, well, that doctor's statement's 6 months old. How do I know that they're not better situation? It's already frustrating enough for people who create a power of attorney and go to use it, and maybe it's 2 years old, and they're saying, well, that's not current, and we have to go through the, you know, there's nothing that says it has to be made within 6 months to be mm-hmm. effective, and try and solve that problem. But just adding that springing power to her, David, just slows down and hinders the person who's really just trying to help.
Yeah, when your dad or mom get in a car and drive three states over confused about where they're going, the last thing you want to do is try to figure out who's going to certify them as incapacitated so you can, you
right.
know, act on their behalf. So
right.
I'm also a big believer in that. Let's talk about the healthcare power of attorney, healthcare proxy, another very, very important document to have part of a living estate plan.
Exactly. And that's the good term, living estate plan. And that is I call the power of attorney a financial document. Mm-hmm. The healthcare representative is a person dealing with the person, making healthcare decisions, making healthcare arrangements. Actually goes to the point of also making funeral arrangements if the document's created. Both those documents in tandem, the power of attorney and the healthcare, keep you out of the court and avoid having to go to court to get a guardianship.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, if somebody becomes incapacitated and they've got things that need to be dealt with, if you don't have those documents in place, the only way you're going to get authority is to file an action, have somebody, a judge, to be unable to take care of their affairs, and then the court appoints somebody to be in charge. But then you're working with that third party throughout that, which is the court.
And you don't have to appoint the same person as your power of attorney as you do your health care representative.
No, many times family circumstance and situation, you've got one child or one individual who's very skilled to deal with the assets, and you've got another one who maybe even works in the health care field and is a natural person who's not going to be intimidated by trying to ask the questions or is going to be capable of understanding when the doctor describes the circumstance and condition and here's our options, here's what we need to do, and then you've got, in essence, your own professional looking at it and making the call for you.
Let's talk about the living will, another very important document to let people know what you want to have happen if you're put in a pretty tough situation.
A living will, as I like to call it, is a condition-specific document. It's when the physician's confident enough that death is imminent, they're prepared to put it in writing. And it says, do everything to maintain comfort and alleviate pain, but Indiana gives you three choices. I want artificially supplied food and hydration, or I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it gives us a third option, which is say, I'm not deciding. I'll leave it up to my healthcare representative. So what that means is I want an IV in a feeding tube, or I don't want an IV in a feeding tube.
What about in Indiana, declaration of anatomical gifts, like an organ donation? I know a lot of, like, I go to the license branch and they ask me if I want to be an organ donor, and I say yes.
Yep. And that's why they're asking there, because in Indiana, to make it be an organ donor, you put that on your driver's license. It's not a document that we as an attorney would prepare if you came in to do an estate plan. That is a designation you would make at the Bureau of Motor Vehicles.
And a lot of these laws are state-specific, so if you move to a different state, you might want to check with the local professionals.
Exactly. They're all creatures of statute, and statutes are different from one state to the other. And if you're looking to move and you've got documents, one of the first things you want to do when you get down where your new location, you've taken the time to get the documents, you want to make sure they work, so get somebody in that area within that jurisdiction to look and make sure they're effective.
Back years ago, my grandma, she was a twin, and she passed away a few years ago. I can't even remember now how long it goes, because time goes by so quickly. But she had been in the hospital many times, and we thought she may die, and she would not sign this living will. And she kept telling her daughters, my mom and my mom's sisters, that had I signed this, that I'd already be dead, because they wouldn't have resuscitated her, shocked her, whatever she needed to have done. So anyway, they were finally like, David, you're the only one she will listen to. Will you please sit down with mom, grandma, and talk to her about this? So I said, sure. And it was right in my office on South College. I remember it. And she comes in. My mom brings her in. We go in the conference room. I'm like, grandma, you know, they really want to know because they're under a lot of stress. And she said, well, finally, after a big, long discussion, she said, I just want it to be God's will. And I said, I understand, grandma. I do understand, but we need to know, you know, what you want to, what box to check. I just want it to be God's will. Please, grandma, please give me one answer. It was God's will that those doctors went to doctor school. It was God's will that all of that equipment was created. So it's God's will that all of it's going to be used on me. I said, okay, grandma, let's make the healthcare reps decide. That's how we did it. Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about taxes. You know, a lot of folks don't need to worry about estate taxes. We'll get into that. But almost everyone in this day and age need to worry about income taxes. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, for years, people have said there's only two things for sure in life, death and taxes, right? So let's talk about some taxes. You know, in this day and age, let's talk first about assets that are highly appreciated. My mom and her three sisters, I'll go back to grandma. Grandma lived in Highland Village, 439 Harvey Drive, and she was one of the very first houses in there. I don't know what year it was, probably in the 50s or early 60s, and they didn't pay much for it, maybe $10,000 or $15,000. At some point in her life, she decided she wanted to give the house to the girls. And people do that because they think that's the right thing to do and get rid of their assets. So, you know, if they need to go in the nursing home and all that. But when she did give that, the house was worth about $80,000. Well, then my aunt decided that she would like to buy the house. So she turned around and bought it from the three girls. Well, what happened, because grandma gave the house to the girls, they assumed her cost basis, which was, say, $15,000. So whenever my aunt decided to buy it from everyone else for $80,000, then there was a gain on that sale, of which the girls had to pay tax. Now, the right way to handle that would have been for grandma to have sold the house to my aunt, received the money, and then just gave it to the girls, and we'll get to gifting later. But one thing, Tom, that a lot of people don't get is that I don't care how much gain you have in something. I mean, I guess I do care how much gain, but for most ordinary people, if you have a piece of farmland, if you have a stock, if you have anything that's highly appreciated, when you die and it passes date of death rather than present interest gift, there's an entirely different tax situation
Indeed.
That people need to know about.
Yes, that's true. So long as it stays on the books, it's a one-time election. You do have to die to get the benefit of it. But the reality is, if I have an appreciated asset, I hold it until my death. It's in my name, and it comes out of my name under my will or through a trust or even a transfer on death account that they have no current interest in. It gets an adjusted basis to the date of death value. Relates back to the day when we had to pay when you had to pay taxes. Of course, we no longer have an Indiana inheritance tax, but that does not eliminate the stepped up in basis. It's still there. And the fact that the federal estate tax exemption is now over $5 million doesn't change. You still get a stepped up basis on appreciable assets if you hold them until you die.
So I paid $10 for this piece of property, and now it's worth, let's call it $1 million. And
right.
I die, and my son Will inherits this $1 million, then he turns around and sells it, no income taxes.
That's exactly right. He's going to take that $10 investment, sell it for $1 million, and he'll get dollar for dollar less the expenses of the cost of the sale.
So if he's listening, which is highly unlikely because I think he's in Nashville, Tennessee, in his new little Subaru that
but
he's
we know
now driving.
He can listen online when he gets back.
Remember, son, read chapter 6 in the book. Mom and I are spending it all, then we're burning the house down. So don't forget that one. True story. All right.
But the bottom line is that is something that people lose sight of, and they get so concerned about getting something out.
Yeah, right.
And you have to sit back and talk to them. I understand what you're saying, but if you want them to net more dollars and realize that, hold on to that.
Start shedding these assets thinking it's the right thing to do without
right.
really consulting
And all you're
anybody.
Doing, you may be there's no death tax that we're avoiding, but all we're doing is passing on an income tax liability.
You mentioned the federal estate tax. I mean, for many years, I know when you started, it was far less than this, I think. But
oh,
when
way
I
back
started,
in the olden days?
Yeah, but
yes,
when I started in the early 90s, if you had an estate larger than $600,000, and you were subject to federal estate tax. And folks, what's included in your estate, all your stuff, but plus, this is what really got you, plus the proceeds from life insurance policies.
Right.
Not federally, those are federally tax-free, state tax-free as well, but they got included into the calculation in your estate. Well, then it went to like $1 million, and then it went away completely. And by the way, the year it went away completely, George Steinbrenner died, worth like $1 billion. So he got him good on the way out. Then it came back to, I think, $1 million. Then they finally adjusted it to like $5 million. Then each year it keeps going up. I think it's around $5.4 million now.
That's
so
right.
If you're married, basically what we're saying is that if you have, less than $10.5 million or whatever $1 million, you do not have a federal estate tax problem.
That's right. And that's the other change they made to simplify the process is they made that credit amount, that $5.4 million and change, they made it transferable. So to the extent the first spouse to die doesn't use it, they can pass their credit on to their spouse. So that's right. That's where you would come up with the $10.8 million figure before. And what we'll still see when people come in with old documents, you can remember we used to have these complicated marital, non-marital trust type of situations and formulas. And this has really cleaned up and made it a lot simpler for the majority of the people that we deal with.
So we've talked about capital gains, appreciated assets. We said that Indiana no longer has an inheritance tax. Most people don't know that either. We talked just about federal estate tax. But, Tom, here's one that really gets people tripped up, and that's gifting. For years, if I gave away more than $10,000 to any one person, it was 11. Now it's like $14,000.
Right.
And I ask this in the classes we teach. I'll say, okay, you don't have to raise your hand, but, if you want to, go ahead. That if I give to somebody more than $14,000 this year, are you going to pay tax? Am I going to pay tax? Is somebody going to pay tax? And they may not raise their hands, Tom, but I get a lot of noddings of the head like, yeah, I think someone's going to have to pay some tax. Then we go back to the $5.4 million.
A lifetime or death time transfer exemption.
It's good at death. It's good
right.
while I'm living. So let's say that I did give more than $14,000. Let's say I gave $114,000. The first $14,000 is basically free.
Right.
The next hundo goes against my $5.4 million. So now I'm only able to give $5.3 million away.
Exactly.
So be it.
And what it means, if I've given more than that in the calendar year, I am obligated to file a gift tax return.
Which doesn't mean anyone owes anything.
No,
it's just information.
It's an information-only return. That's exactly right.
So for the most part, most people listening are not subject to federal estate taxes. You will not have any Indiana state inheritance taxes. If you manage your capital gains correctly, you may not have any capital gains taxes. You won't at death. But Tom, one that hits almost everybody, especially in this day and age when you're on your own when it comes to saving for retirement, are income taxes.
Yes.
Income taxes are due on things that you have not yet paid taxes on.
Exactly.
It could be a buildup of gains in your IRA.
Exactly.
It could be in an annuity.
Right.
Things of that nature. Tell us how that works.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, yes, I do not pay a death tax. A death tax was based upon the value of the asset that transferred from the decedent to the survivor. But what you inherit may carry with it income tax liability, and as a consequence, I may receive that annuity, but it's got deferred income on it that's not been taxed. So consequently, when it comes out, it's going to be taxed. So it's not a death tax; it's an income tax, and the various assets carry with them income tax liability to the succeeding owner, the beneficiary, or heir.
That's why we always say, folks, that a retirement account is never worth what it says on paper because there's a mortgage against it, and that's the tax man. So if it's $1 million, maybe there's $300,000 owed against it, maybe $400,000, and your heirs will have to pay the tax as well out of that or other assets. Here's the way it works right now on a retirement account. Currently, the way the law reads, that if you pass away with a retirement account and you have living, breathing people on your beneficiary form, they can put that into an inherited, properly titled inherited IRA, and then only be forced to take a minimum distribution based on their life expectancy. So let's say that I'm 40. I'm not. I'm 47. But let's say I'm 40 because I know the math easier. And my life expectancy is 87. That means I only have to take out 1/47th of the account, pay the tax, let the rest grow. That's a good deal. Now, I will tell you, prior to the change in administration at the federal level, in the last three budgets, there was legislation to eliminate what we now know as the stretch IRA or the inherited IRA, which would require your children, your grandchildren, to pay all the taxes over at least a five-year period of time or during a five-year period of time. So I'm not saying it's not law now, but I could see it happening at some point down the road. All right, we need to take another break. When we come back, we're going to dig into wills. You know, what is a will? What if you die without a will? We'll get into properly titling your assets so that they go where you want them to go. We'll talk about probate, trust, and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Reclaim the clutter areas of your home with help from Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage over on 17th Street. Newly remodeled, 24-hour monitored access, offering pickup as well. Go online to BloomingtonAffordableStorage.com. Actually, my car is over there. The one I drive, I call my motorcycle on four wheels. Now, here's the deal. I'm kind of the age, well, actually, I'm at the perfect age to buy a Harley Davidson. That's who Harley markets to. The 47, 48-year-old guy, right?
You're smarter than that, David.
Who wants to, you know, put on a do-rag and leather jackets and drive through small towns scaring children and women, right? I'm not really that kind of guy. But I decided a few years ago that I would buy a used Camaro convertible. It's like 4 years old. Got a really good deal on it. So that's my motorcycle on four wheels. That's currently being stored, I promise you, over at Bloomington Affordable Self-Storage. So it's just about time for me to break it out and be driving around town. My son got his driver's license this week, and you know, for the last like 3 or 4 years, he thought that was going to be his car.
He'd like to drive that.
Oh,
I could see that.
That ain't going to happen. I told him that many times. Although he does know that if you turn the traction control off, crank the wheel hard to the left, and punch the gas over on the Fairfax Dam, you can do a donut. Just saying.
How did he learn that?
I have a video on my phone of that one. I'll have to show you, Jim, afterwards. It's fantastic. All right, let's talk about wills. Now, a lot of people, Tom, just think about a will as something they keep putting off. But I'm telling you, folks, that if you die without a will in the state of Indiana, you die with something they refer to that sounds pretty painful, intestate. And Tom, if you die intestate, not only does it sound painful, it can be kind of painful for your family.
Well, it can. I mean, because what you're leaving it up to, and I mean, we're living it, you know, the legislature is in session.
Right.
What you're leaving it up to is the laws as established by the legislature and where you stand in life. Are you married? Is it a second marriage? Do I have children from my second marriage? Do I have children from my first marriage? Are my parents still alive? All those things and variables, if I've got five kids, who's going to be the executor of my estate? I haven't picked that person, so the law is going to decide that, the judge is going to decide that, and circumstance is going to decide that. Instead of you, you have waived the option to set out the plan, to give the instructions, to draft what's going to happen.
If you die without a will, obviously there's a map that the state has you go through to see
exactly.
where your stuff goes. I know
exactly.
that, like, if I'm married and I have something in my name only and I die and I have one child, then half goes to my spouse, half goes to my child. But it's more complicated than that. I mean, they look over and up and through
woods. That's true. And the other thing to recognize, too, though, is you've named the one person that I cannot disinherit, and that is my surviving spouse. So what if I'm married in a second marriage later in life and I've got assets that are just in my name? I have no prenup agreement. I have no understanding with my second spouse, and I've got children from my first marriage, and I die with that property just in my name. That survive, and I don't have a will. That surviving spouse has got a right to that property, and it's not going to go to my kids if that's where I want it to go.
So I've always described the will as an instruction manual. To the executor, to the courts. This is what I want to have done with my stuff.
Exactly.
And it only controls the things that are held in your name individually.
That's exactly right. There are various assets we own in our lifetime that give us the right to give direction on where something's to go when we pass. And what the will is doing is it is giving, or if you die without a will, the law of the state of Indiana gives the direction on where it goes, because the manner in which that asset is titled or the nature of that asset doesn't lend itself to having a beneficiary or a transfer on death individual name. So it's got to go somewhere. In order to keep things moving, it's got to go somewhere. So if you don't decide, the laws of the state of Indiana and dying without a will intestate will decide where it goes.
So I may create a will, and I have a lot of assets that don't even go through the will.
Right.
So such things that are direct transfer, like something that has a beneficiary designation, like an IRA,
right.
life insurance, annuities.
Right.
What if I have a joint with rights of survivorship account? That doesn't go through my will.
That's right.
Or a pay on death designation.
Doesn't go.
Transfer on death designation.
That's right.
In Indiana, you can put a pay on death or transfer on death on just about anything anymore.
About anything you can, anything, almost any type of an asset account, and anything that's registered with the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. The other thing to also recognize that will cannot change is a will cannot make a different direction on where designation on that asset. So that life insurance policy or that bank account, mm-hmm. somebody will say, I've got a bank account at XYZ Bank and I want it to go to Bill, and that account is transfer on death to Mary. The will's not going to change that. That's a contract between you and that asset holder, and a will is not the proper designation of beneficiary change of beneficiary.
Yeah, I've seen many, many times where people come in and say, my life insurance goes to this person. Your life insurance goes to where the beneficiary form says it goes.
Exactly.
Not that. Who makes a good executor of your will? Because this is a person that has to kind of coach this thing through the process.
Right. Again, they're given the, as we call it, if it's an instruction manual, they're given that, and their charge is to understand what it says, to understand that they have a responsibility. They've got they're held to a higher level. They've got a fiduciary responsibility to gather everything. So you want somebody, first of all, who's not going to be befuddled by all of a sudden having some chaos around them, mm-hmm. who is organized enough to know, here's what I've got to go to get. And the other thing I would suggest, who recognizes that there are people skilled who can help you accomplish
right,
this.
Right.
From the attorney to the accountant, and even to the investment advisor who's helped these people set everything up. There are people that if you contact them, that's what they do. They can walk you through the process and help you get it done.
I always tell people when asked that question, first, you know, be nice if they were alive an executor. One, two, are they willing?
Right.
And three, are they kind of a detail-oriented person that's going to get this thing done? In some cases, Tom, a will may not be enough. Like, for instance, selecting a guardianship for your child or your grandchildren or something like that. I mean, guardianships are a really, really important piece.
Indeed. And that's if I have a minor child, the place I make the designation for the guardian in case something happens to mom and dad is in that will. And I will say to many young people, everything they've got is jointly owned. They may have little to no equity in their house, but they've got a pretty valuable asset sleeping in that bedroom mm-hmm. upstairs. And the will is where you need to make that designation, who you want to take care of that little one in case something happens to both of you.
You know, it reminded me when we talked about the little one, going back to the healthcare proxies we talked earlier
yes.
about, we have to talk about how you not only should have a healthcare representative for yourself, but you may want to also have one on your adult children.
Yes, you send a child off to college and they're gone, and who's going to speak for them, and how do I get this information?
Because they're an adult.
That's exactly right. That's,
may not act like
and,
one.
And the whole situation, well, let's not go down that road, but the whole situation there, you run into the HIPAA rules. I'm mom and dad, but they're 19.
Real life story, folks. A friend of mine had a son in California, situation just like this, was hit by a car. He lives in Plainfield. The son's in California. He's trying to get information, and he just can't get the information that he needs to find out how bad. It ended up being a critical situation. Had he had the healthcare power of attorney or representative in place, he could have gotten a lot more information and gotten that to the proper authorities. The guardianship, folks, is very, very important. We need to take a break. I hate this because we have so much good stuff to cover. But when we come back, we're going to be talking about the different types of ownership again, but also about probate and trust. And we want to talk about avoiding the probate process or maybe not. Because one of the things that folks don't know that, avoiding the probate process is okay and fine and dandy and all that, but you never really close the books on that stuff. I mean, it's in some way, shape, or form, you're always kind of still sort of exposed, whereas a will that actually takes you through the probate process will close that sucker out, and when it's done, it's done. No one's going to come back and contest it any longer. We'll take a break, come back, and talk to Tom about that. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, we talk about this estate plan, and you know, one of the things you have to realize, folks, a lot of folks don't do it because they have paralysis by overanalysis. Think about your situation in shorter-term increments. In the next 3 to 5 years, if something would occur, here's who I would want to, you know, raise my child. Here's who I would want to handle the estate. Here's who I would want to handle the money for my child. And then in 3 to 5 years, revisit that again. We recently were kind of reviewing some of our own personal stuff, and my father-in-law has been well documented here on the show. He has dementia. Well, the last time we updated things, he was still listed as one of the possible backups to a backup, you know, so obviously we had to take that off. So don't have paralysis by over analysis, like, okay, when I'm 80 or when I'm 90. Just think about now, the here and now. This is a living, breathing process, isn't it, Tom?
That's exactly right. And the other thing to recognize is once it's done, doesn't mean I'm done. It's not a completion and here's the document and I'm going to live with it going forward. You can modify and change these documents.
Sometimes people at the end of a will have just a list of stuff, like they can add to it and sign things.
Yes.
And like, hey, I want my hutch to go to Jim, I want this to go, my guns to go to him. And is that a legally?
Yes, the Indiana statutes were amended a couple of years ago to allow us to create what we call a list and make reference, so long as when the document is drafted, you make reference, it says, and I want these items of personal property to be distributed pursuant to this list, which I attach and be a part of this, my last will and testament. Concept number one is to allow the person to modify that list and not have to come see the attorney,
mm-hmm.
so they can add to it, delete from it, and keep the current copy there. Now, that works for personal property. Don't start putting business interests and things like that.
Yeah.
The statute's very limited on what it's talking to.
Put your tractor in there.
Yeah. Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, your tractor, just not your interest in the tractor company.
Tom, a lot of people are really afraid of this word probate because they hear that it's a dirty word. Is there an advertisement to the world that says, "Hey, I died"? You know, do you want any of it? And just about every day, or at least every weekend, if you look in the classified section, you'll see estates that are going through probate, and it will say things like, you know, if you have a claim, you know, please make it now or forever hold your peace. But the probate process really shouldn't be that scary. It's not that difficult. And at the end of the day, it's pretty clean.
The answer, that's definitely true. And the probate process has been simplified quite a bit by the repeal of the Indiana inheritance tax. That's, I would tell you, is cut off 3 to 4 months. All probate is, the probate process just describes the manner in which a decedent dies.
Mm-hmm.
He or she has got property in their name. At their passing, it's got to go somewhere. The entity or the individual who accomplishes that is the court. And the process that the court uses to take it out of the decedent's name and get it into the name of the heirs under the will or your heirs because you die intestate is probate. It's just describing a process of getting assets out of the name of decedent into the name of survivors.
So things that avoid probate are accounts that are directly transferred. We mentioned those earlier, whether it's a beneficiary form, joint with rights of survivorship, Those are direct transfers. That avoids the probate process because it avoids the whole process in its entirely.
It gives direction.
But the other thing that a lot of folks will do is set up trust.
Yes.
And I see people set up trust for all kinds of bad reasons. Maybe they don't even need one. But people do set up trust for the purpose of avoiding probate.
Exactly.
And or controlling distributions from the grave. I call it kind of an income inheritance of sorts.
Oh, definitely true. I mean, a trust is another manner to title property and effectively avoid the court, because the asset is now titled in the trust.
Mm-hmm.
We die, the trust continues. That you name a new trustee, if I've been my own trustee, and then the trust says who succeeds to the ownership of the property. So let's go back to that same analogy we've been talking about, all these other things that have direction on where they go when they die. The difference being I fund that trust. I put my assets, instead of being in my name, to be in my trust.
Mm-hmm.
So they're held in my trust in that name of the trust. So when I die, I'm gone, but the trust continues, and I, as in a will, designate a successor trustee, a la a personal representative or executor, and I designate beneficiaries. Difference being, for that document to be effective, I don't have to file it with the court, so therefore I'm not involved with the legal process as in being in the court.
You mentioned that. I mean, you have a trust that you've created, you've funded, you run it, you benefit from it. Some people will set up irrevocable trusts or irrevocable trusts.
Mm-hmm.
But not that common anymore. I don't see it that often. I mean, I see it when people are trying to get on VA benefits or maybe
right.
some things like that. But
right.
when you talk about the different trusts, you have these revocable, irrevocable, you know, living trust, kind of interchangeable with revocable, a lot of different terms out
right,
there.
Right, but the norm would be a living trust and a revocable trust. The concept being a document that can change as life circumstance and situation change. An irrevocable trust is exactly what you're saying. Once I've done it and I've funded it, that document is that document. I can't change it. It's not a tool that, again, so much of the change in the taxing, that it's not a document that you see used near as much as we did before when we were dealing with different exemption amounts.
We're seeing it a lot more now with a lot of second marriages.
Yes.
In kids of different marriages.
Yes, yes. Yeah, and at some point in time, the other reality is a revocable trust becomes irrevocable
when you die.
When the settlor, grantor of the trust, passes away, then the ability to modify or change that document's gone. So that trust that was the revocable trust of John Smith is now the irrevocable trust of John Smith.
We see a lot more of the marital trust where, you know, the second marriage and you know, I have two kids, you have two kids, but when I die, I want the money to be there for your benefit. But then when you die, I want my money to
right.
go to my kids. So
exactly.
That can be done, folks. So if you're in a second marriage, and I know y'all love each other and we're going to treat everyone equal, but I can tell you from experience, I had a situation come up, and we have to take a break, where that's exactly what happened. They said, okay, we're not going to worry about it because the other spouse will make sure that everyone gets their share. Well, the husband died, and about 10, 15 years later, all of a sudden, the stepchildren lost contact with stepmother, wouldn't come visit her, they got in arguments, got in fights, whatever it might be. And next thing you know, stepmom's in there marking off. So we went from 9 all the way down to 3. She dies, and guess what? Everybody's mad. Everyone's contesting. In fact, it's still not even shut down, and I had to go testify 2 years ago on this
yep.
thing. So
yep.
take care of this stuff now. Don't assume anything, because you know what that does to everyone. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the big show. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks to Tom Bunger for being our guest once again this year. Tom, I don't know how many years you've been on with me, but I've been on for nearly 16 years.
Well, I've probably been on 16
pretty
years.
Close to that. Yeah, at least once every year, sometimes twice. We didn't have to work around football season like we sometimes
nope,
do.
Nope. And at least not in the spring.
But you know, you can't. People don't pay attention to something until they're ready to pay attention to it. So you and I could talk about this probably once a month. And somebody out there is going to say, oh, yeah,
that's
I need
right.
to do something. But just, I think, if nothing else, take the information that we shared today and act upon it.
Exactly. Create that list. Even if you don't take the action to create the documents, create what's there. Have that listing of assets. Have that listing of beneficiaries. Have those contact information. I feel so sorry when I see people come in And they know that they've got to do something, but they don't know what they've got to do it with.
And if they call and make an appointment, you can provide a sheet to help them
exactly.
Sort of organize
We've got the inventory. We've got an asset listing sheet that an organizer would put that together. Exactly.
All right, folks. So listen, I've been doing this show for a long time. I love doing it, as you can tell, and I plan to do it as long as they'll allow me to step in the studio and they don't change my door code. We'll see how that goes. But I want to make sure that I send out a very thankful and appreciative moment here to my producer, Jim Ritter. Jim is moving on, and I've had a lot of producers. I've had Jesse Hines back in the day. Remember Jesse?
I remember Jesse.
Jesse was the laziest one we ever had. He was pretty good, but kind of lazy. And he turned out good. By the way, he's in Chicago now, too, somewhere. We've had those flash in the pans that come along and mess up the music, but I've always been very patient. But Jim Ritter has been the best producer. He produces the Buddy Bill Show on Saturday mornings. What's it called, Jim?
Inside Outdoors.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone can put up with that, they can put up with any. I mean, he gets up at 6 in the morning to do that show on a Saturday. He comes in at 6 o'clock at night on Thursday to do my show. Mr. Reliable, that's what we're going to call him. He's Mr. Reliable. So I'm so proud of him. He got a job up in Chicago where he's from, moving back home to be around family. And, Jim, you'll be wildly successful in whatever that you do. I appreciate you very, very much. Guys, we have had a good run here with Jim Ritter. I hope the next producer is even half as good.
Half as good.
Because he makes me look good. He'll just cut stuff in like he did today for that IRS thing. He'll allow me to record a spot and plug it in. He'll not have the phones all messed up when we have outside callers. He doesn't make any excuses. I've never had to worry about Jim not showing up, so it's been a good thing. He even puts up with Wayne and Ryan from my office when they're in here.
Well,
who, by the way, after every show, they always say that was had to be the best show ever, and Jim always graciously says, "Yeah, I think it was." So not only is Jim a great guy, he's a fantastic liar. All right, guys, we can't wait to be back in the studio next week. I don't even know who's going to produce the show. I might have to learn how to run the board. I have no idea. But we're going to be back with a great show next week. It's going to be an investment show, the first one of the month, so Hot Rod Holloway will be with me. Folks, we appreciate y'all. This has been Your Money with David Hayes.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.